It is Oktoberfest season in Wisconsin, and financial planner Kevin McKinley will have a barrel full of advice and information during On Your Money this hour. Good morning. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is 8 minutes past 8 o'clock on this Tuesday, October the 4th. This is the month when many workers evaluate their at-work retirement and benefits plans, and Kevin will have some thoughts on what you should keep in mind as you go over your options. Plus, in a fine Wisconsin tradition, some facts and figures on the economic impact of beer. If you have a personal finance question for Kevin or want to give us your beer preference, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, with offices in Eau Claire and Madison, and he joins us from our studios in Eau Claire. Hello, Kevin. Did you get to polka or have a beer while you were off last week? You were just poking.
I'm just poking right now in the studio here as we speak. I haven't been to a wedding reception in quite some time.
I know. Do you have those suspenders on or anything?
I may have strained something. Even I think. I normally wear lederhosen just as a. As a fashion sense, I happen to look very good in lederhosen. I just have that kind of figure. But yeah, this is a good time of year for me. I really enjoy it.
I was at the Oktoberfest celebration in Appleton the last weekend in September. I guess October begins in September in some communities, including lacrosse. Lacrosse is a big granddaddy. Oktoberfest did, I think, just finish up this past weekend, but there are still plenty of Oktoberfests kicking around out there. And you thought this might be a good time to talk about the economic impact and different aspects of beer.
Well, I don't think people realize just how important beer is, not just to those of us in Wisconsin and nationwide, but the world and to civilization. Dr. Solomon Katz, about 25 years ago, had a landmark study where he said the Mesopotamians in 10,000 BC were roaming around their lands, and they figured out a way to ferment grain, but they've also figured out that if they were going to enjoy their fermented grain, they had to stay in one place to not only plant the grain, but grow it, and then harvest it and ferment it. So he said that's actually the key to civilization. Now, you know what really happened is Dr. Solomon Katz just enjoyed a nice cold beer.
And
his wife probably said, you know, you're at the bars all the time. It's research. I'm doing research. And then he had to come up with a thesis to try to justify all this. But good for him. Globally, the Czech Republic leads all nations in per capita beer consumption, about 40 gallons per person per year. The United States only consumes about half of that, but that's still a 12-pack per month per person per year.
What about Wisconsin?
Wisconsin is a little bit better than that, about 26 gallons per year, but that's still only number six per capita.
Okay.
Nevada is actually the highest per capita beer-consuming state, but of course that's because a lot of people go to Nevada, drink beer, and then go back to their own home state here. But we still consume about 4.4 million barrels per year. And as part of the crack staff of On Your Money financial research background, we decided to check up on what has been almost a myth in Wisconsin in regard to alcohol and taverns. If it really were a law that a minor could go into a bar and drink escorted by a guardian legally. And the answer to that is
yes.
It is a real law. You can go in with a parent, a guardian, or a spouse. As long as that person is legal age, a minor can legally drink. And it's still up to the discretion of the proprietor of the establishment. But I think for a lot of 19-year-olds out there, if you're dating a 21-year-old and you're looking for one more reason to get married, this could be it. People got married for worse reasons.
Well, back when I was in college, there was an 18-year-old drinking age. So this was not underage drinking when I was in college. I drank point beer in Stevens Point sometimes, and that beer is still around, but a lot of other beers from back in the day don't seem to have survived in the marketplace. What's still around and what isn't?
Well, this was surprising, but a recent report from a website called 24/7 Wall Street documented some of the biggest names in beer and how their sales have fallen in just the last few years. In the last 5 years, Milwaukee's Best, which that could definitely be Milwaukee, but I don't think it was the best ever to come out of Milwaukee. That's down about 50% in sales. Old Milwaukee is down about 30% to 40%. Budweiser, Miller Genuine Draft down about 50%. And Michelob is the same, off about 60% over the last four or five years. Now, some of that is because the brands are cannibalizing themselves with more variations on top of it, and MGD Light and 60 and 93 and raspberry flavored. But more of it is because there are smaller craft breweries coming on, and people are really developing a taste for them. And this is actually just like the old days. 150 years ago, every town had at least one brewery, and it was just like the grocery store or the general market or so. And now Wisconsin is leading one of the rebirths of that. There are over 60 small breweries now coming back online. It's only about 5% of the national market. Some of the more prominent ones are New Glarus, which was not only last year's SBA, Small Business Administration, Wisconsin Business Person of the Year, but Deb Carey was the runner-up for the National Small Business Person of the Year. And then, of course, Capital Brewery in Madison celebrated its 25 years in business. And then I just saw that the Ale Asylum is going to open up a new facility out by the airport here, too. Now, a lot of these breweries have been well-known for their beer, but they've also been in the news for political and economic reasons as well.
How so?
The smaller beer makers were concerned a few months ago over a couple pieces of legislation in Wisconsin. One, of course, was excise taxes, which beer makers and all producers are, of course, concerned about excise taxes. But more so, the distribution of these beers is very complex, and as to who can distribute beers and under what circumstances. And so they were concerned about trying to get their the laws that govern how their beer gets from their brewery into the supermarket or liquor store shelves. And then this is was something that is going to be on a national basis, something that's going to be in the forefront in the next few months here. Two marketing executives wanted to buy the Pabst Blue Ribbon brand and Schlitz. And so they started a website called buyabeercompany.com and took pledges in from people who said, we're going to give money, and they needed $300 million. Well, the Securities and Exchange Commission said they didn't register these securities in the way they were trying to offer this, so they shut the thing down before any money was collected. But it brought attention to what's known as crowdsourcing, meaning how can people raise smaller amounts of money to buy companies without having to go through the rigorous SEC process.
Well, besides the Neighborhood Tavern, is there a good place for listeners to find out more information about Wisconsin beers?
A great book by Kevin Rolinski called Wisconsin's Best Beer Guide. It first came out in 2006, and it was updated in 2010. And it not only Kevin is normally a travel writer, but he went through all Wisconsin and documented not only where all the different breweries were, but also some of the interesting attractions near each brewery, if you happen to make it there. And then there are also coupons. This is a great deal, $130 worth of coupons in there for either free beer or promotional items.
Yeah, and you know what? What a coincidence, Kevin. We will have Kevin Rovalinsky on the show on Friday, October the 14th. That's next Friday from 6 until 7 in the morning, because beer isn't just for breakfast anymore. And we will we will talk about his beer guide, and we are going to be giving away that beer guide as the special thank you gift for a pledge during that hour, because as you know, and as I hope listeners know, we have a special half the time pledge drive coming up starting next week, starting a week from today. And Kevin, we're kicking things off next week, and you have a special giveaway as well.
Well, we've been very fortunate in the past that people have supported On Your Money through pledging in record numbers. But part of that is because hopefully they like the show, but more so I think it's because of our mini money books, where we pick various topics that are of interest to people, condense it down into maybe a 10 to 15 page electronic file, and anyone who pledges at any amount gets a copy of this mini money book. And we've covered college expenses, retirement, Social Security. This one, I think, is going to be the most popular one we have ever done. It is called Make the Most of Your Mortgage. It's going to tell prospective homeowners, current homeowners, older homeowners, anybody who has either a mortgage or the desire to have a home and a mortgage, how to best manage their mortgage. And you know, every time we bring this topic up, it brings in a a flood of questions and comments about the virtues and the ins and outs of should you take out a new mortgage, should you pay it off more quickly, if you don't pay it off quickly, what should you do with the money. So our mini money book that will be available to pledges at any amount will be available next Tuesday, October 11th.
And if you would like more information on the pledge drive, you can go to WPR.org. We are starting the pledge drive next Tuesday, and instead of going the usual 12 days, which is typically the case for a fall pledge drive, we have cut the pledge drive in half from 12 days to just 6 days. So that means that you will get more of your favorite programs and less pledge drive, but we still need to raise all the money it takes to pay for the programming. So you can pledge ahead of time if you want to at WPR.org. Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner, managing member of McKinley Money, LLC. If you have a question for Kevin, 1-800-642-1234, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@WPR.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page. It is time now for the On Your Money email bag. Sherry heard us, Kevin, discussing life insurance for children, and she says she and her husband purchased a cash value policy on her daughter many years ago. The daughter is now grown, and they wonder if they should give the policy and the $60,000 death benefit and the $11,000 cash value to the daughter to buy a house.
Perhaps that's not the worst idea in the world, but there might be some tax implications when they pull the money out. They might have to pay taxes on it versus the premiums paid versus what the net proceeds are. And that dollar amount might not really go that far into helping her purchase a house, but it's better than nothing. However, if it were up to me, I would have them consider a couple of other options rather than just giving her the policy and having her cashing it out and using it to buy a house.
What other options?
Well, for one thing, leave it alone. I'm not a big fan of starting up a life insurance policy as an investment. It should be life insurance, no more, no less. But many older life insurance policies pay a fixed rate of return that is between 3 to 5%. And while that is not as safe as, say, a savings bond or a certificate of deposit that's insured, it's still a fairly conservative place to get a very high rate of return relative to what is out there now. Plus, policies that have been owned, even these cash value policies that many people have been disappointed with, once you've owned them for about 20 years, there's probably worth keeping just because the accumulated cash value and the death benefit and the earnings are more than you could get if you were to start a new one. There's a website called evaluatelifeinsurance.org, which the Consumer Federation of America, a guy affiliated with that group, will actually not only help you decide if you should keep this policy or not, but decide if a new policy is right for you or compare two policies. And it's a cost of about $85, but the guy is straight up and he really knows what he's doing. Evaluatelifeinsurance.org, and we'll have a link up to that website at our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
And what if they decide not to keep the policy?
You know what I would suggest is they may want to convert it to a paid-up term policy. You mentioned she has a $60,000 death benefit on the policy and about $11,000 or so in cash value. Just a rough back-of-the-pencil calculation, I'm guessing that policy could be converted to a term life insurance policy that would last for 30 years and have about a $500,000 death benefit. Now, in theory, it would be worth nothing at the end of 30 years, but the $500,000 death benefit can help the daughter not only if she has dependents or a spouse or partner who would need that money and to help pay off the mortgage.
Kevin McKinley is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, a registered investment advisor with offices in Eau Claire and Madison. Kevin does not intend to provide personalized investment advice through this broadcast and does not represent that the securities or services discussed are suitable for any investor. Investors should consult with their own financial advisors prior to making any investment decisions. That being said, we will get to your personal finance questions in just a moment at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, and you're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I just felt like playing that song again. This is an Oktoberfest edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine along with financial planner Kevin McKinley. And a little bit later in the program, October is the month when many workers evaluate their retirement and other benefits packages. And Kevin will have some thoughts on what you should keep in mind as you go over your options a little bit later in the program. But now time for your questions, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. Michelle in Green Bay joins us first. Hello, Michelle.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Taking my call. You're making my day. I was up all night trying to think, how am I going to get on, because I have something so important to me that I was hoping you could help with.
Well, I'm glad you called, and you're on first.
But I'm sorry, that's all the time we have. The next caller, please. No, I'm sorry. Go ahead, Michelle.
Lady in Green Bay hung herself. Okay. We sold our home last year and moved. I listened to your show, and at the time of buying our mortgage last year, I did a 30-year fixed and got 5%. We took some of the money and used it to do some necessary updates in the house, so I didn't have 20% down. We took some equity out. We're now refinancing again, and I told my mortgage broker I want to do 30-year fixed. I want as much money as I can for as long as I can. That's what I thought I learned on your show. And every time I talk to him, he keeps saying, how about the 15-year? How about the 20? And he gave me a rate yesterday, but now he threw lender-backed PMI at me because we don't have the 20% down. And this curveball I don't know what to do with. Do we do the lender-backed PMI or pay PMI at a lower rate? Do you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, and it's very confusing. Even something as simple as, hey, here's your mortgage, here's how much money you get, here's the interest rate, and here's the payment, can still be fraught with complexity, even for someone as bright as you sound to be, Michelle, because of the upfront costs. And if you say, hey, you know, if we pay down this loan to the extent that we don't have to get PMI, it's going to use up all of our savings. Well, I don't like paying PMI, which is private mortgage insurance, which borrowers usually have to take it out if they don't have 80% at least of or less of loan to value in their new mortgage. But I like paying PMI payments more than I like you completely exhausting your payments or exhausting your rainy day fund, if you will. So I would rather have you pay PMI than use up all of your savings. And then once you either accumulate enough savings to the point where you can pay it down to get to that 80% ratio, or hopefully, but doubtfully, the value of the home rises enough to offset the difference, then get rid of the PMI. Do you have enough savings to get it down to the 80% level?
No, you know, we took like 25 or so out of the house in equity and made that our fund for work, and we're still sitting on probably 10,000. And I said to my husband, maybe we should throw that back on the down payment. But we want to do the kitchen and some other stuff in a year or two. And I said, if they're going to give us 30 years for 4%, why not take it? We can always.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I would agree with you completely. I wish you'd have called me at 2 o'clock in the morning or whenever this was bugging you. But
that is my husband, because I'm like, I'm going to call Kevin McKinley tomorrow morning. But and, you know, they throw these 20-year and 15-year, and I'm like, is it not wise to do that? Should you take a shorter term? You know,
It feels better to get the shorter term, partially because when they circle that amount of interest you're going to pay over the life of the loan, it's daunting enough at 15 and 20 years. It's overwhelming at 30 years. However, as long as there's no major prepayment penalty, you can take out a 30-year mortgage and then make the payments that would have been required if you were to have taken out the 15 or the 20-year note. And you might take another 6 months or so longer to pay that off. But if at any point in your life over the life of the mortgage, you either decide that it doesn't make sense to do that, maybe you can earn a higher rate of return on the money somewhere else than you're paying on the mortgage, or you need the money for something else like saving for retirement or redoing the kitchen or whatever, you can slow it down and revert back to the smaller payment and the longer time frame. And it just gives you way more flexibility to get the 30-year. I don't know. Sometimes lenders are doing this simply because they're trying to look out for borrowers. And they're trying to, you know, hey, it's such a low rate. It's a great deal. I'm really doing a good job. Other times there might be some incentives there where they might, you know, make some more money on the shorter mortgage than the longer mortgage. I don't know. But I would rather have people generally get the 30-year mortgage and pay it down as slowly as possible rather than go with a shorter amount. And I'd rather have you keep the $10,000 aside and pay the PMI for the time being because it's really low, especially when you pile it on top of a 4% interest rate, and do it that way instead.
Thank you. Oh, you made my day. And I will get your book, October 11th, or the brochure.
Okay, thank you.
All right, thank you, Michelle, very much, and good luck to you. Jeanette in La Crosse is our next caller. Hello, Jeanette.
Hi. I was calling because, one thing, I really appreciate your sense of humor, but I love listening to you guys. You're very entertaining. But one thing that is not funny is CD rates right now.
Mm-hmm.
What, I have a CD that's coming due. What should I do with that money, would you guess?
Well, there's two ways to go with this, and you're right. And it's nothing that, you know, the banks are doing to consumers. It's because interest rates on safe money is incredibly low. A lot of people don't understand or haven't looked recently. The 30-year Treasury, which typically, you know, paid 5, 6, 7, 8%, even in the last 5 or 10 years, is now down. It's hovering just over 3%. And a 10-year Treasury even got under 2% a few weeks ago. And so there's such a demand for so-called safe paper that it's trickling through to certificates of deposit and bidding down rates and up prices. So there are a couple different ways you could go here, Jeanette. One is you could just do nothing because it's unlikely that rates are going to plunge even further from nothing down to less than nothing. You're not missing out on a big rate that you would be earning on the money otherwise. And also, you might see an uptick in rates. One of the things that the Fed is doing, we'll talk about this in a few weeks, might lead to slightly higher interest rates on CDs in the 5 to 10 year range. If you say, no, I really want to have a certificate of deposit, then what I would do is go and get the longest CD you can and just make sure that the penalty for early withdrawal is relatively small. And by relatively small, I mean maybe 6 months to 12 months of interest. That way, if you either need the money or if interest rates rise, or both, you can pull it out, not get hit too hard, and you won't be too much worse for the wear. But in the meantime, if you do need the money, or if you can leave it in the CD and rates don't go up anymore, you'll be getting, 2-2.5%. And finally, I would, if it's a smaller amount of money or you have the access, I would hang on for a few weeks and look at Series I savings bonds. Right now, they pay 4.6% annualized. They're very safe. We've talked about them in the past. But the rate is going to change on November 1st, and the rate is tied to inflation, the Consumer Price Index. We don't know what that rate will be. But I would take a good look at those Series I savings bonds for a portion of the money because you can only buy $5,000 to $10,000 per person per year of those, so you probably can't put all of your CD into that.
Thank you.
All right, Jeanette, thank you. So, Kevin, do you have any financial planner jokes about CD rates?
It's like Jeanette said, sorry, it's no laughing matter.
It's no laughing matter.
Joke about that at all.
CD rates are so low. And we'll let
how low are they?
Joe in Madison is with us now. Hello, Joe.
Hi, Joy. Hi, Kevin. Thanks for taking my call. I own a house out of state, and I have a renter right now, and the renter is very interested in buying the home. But they've told me they have credit issues, and they're not able to get a loan right now. So they've asked me to take out a home equity loan on the home, give them the money to pay off their debts, and then they'll make the payment on the loan. And then they're hopeful that, that will clear up their credit issues and they'll be able to buy the home within like 6 months to a year. And I want to know, is this the most ridiculous thing ever? Or should I really consider it?
I was thinking the same thing, but Kevin?
I think the only thing that might be more ridiculous, and there's some question to this, is if you take out the home equity loan, Joe, and next Tuesday is our pledge drive, if you just transfer those assets over to make the check out to Wisconsin Public Radio, and at least you get a tax deduction on that when you give it. I don't like that at all for several reasons. Yeah. Your suspicions are justified.
Okay.
One of which is actually, if you were in town with these people, you could keep an eye on them. But you're 1,200 miles away or whatever. It's a little tougher to monitor the situation.
Mm-hmm.
I would actually be more. I would still do this very carefully, but I would rather have you say, "Well, I'll tell you what." I'll finance the purchase of the home for you. I'll give you a land contract. You give me a bunch of money down. You make the payments to me at a higher interest rate than what a mortgage would be. And if you ever default on the payments or you can't make it, I get the house back and you have to move out. And I'm not sure I would rather have you do that. Let's put it this way. I'm not sure I would have you do that. I would rather have you do it than go get the home equity line of credit, take care of all their bad problems, which are only likely to come back again to haunt not only them, but you if you get this deeply involved in the situation. But otherwise, no, I'd say, hey, you know what? You guys try to clean things up yourself. I'll help you however I can in terms of, you know, trying to purchase the house. But you using your money to pay their debts off, no, I don't think that's a good idea.
Yeah, and Kevin, why aren't you real wild about the land contract idea?
Well, again, just because it's a long ways away, one of the downfalls of a land contract, and I'm not averse to land contracts per se, but one of the downfalls is that the people may not take good care of the house and then default on the loan. And if they don't take good care of the house, then it becomes Joe's problem after they default. So if he can check on it and keep an eye on it and say, hey, you're maintaining this, you know, the place looks great, there are no holes in the wall, above and beyond what were there before the people moved in, then it's a little better deal. But being this far away from it, I'd rather have them rent it out and have a property management company keep an eye on the place.
Yeah. Okay. My thoughts exactly.
Thank you, Joe, for the call. It's time now for Smart Assets. And Kevin, October is the time when many of us, many workers, evaluate the benefits package that we get from our employers. And you have some advice on what we should keep in mind as we go over these retirement plans and insurance, health insurance options and flex plans. Let's start with the big one, the at-work retirement plan.
Sure. We'll talk about those now and then the other benefit package in the shop around part of the hour. Some people are probably tempted in this environment to either stop contributing to the retirement plan or not start if they haven't been. And I generally think that's a mistake. It's understandable because they're probably paying more now for health insurance. They haven't gotten a raise. Other expenses are living expenses are up. But they still want to take a good look at this, partially because it's a really great way to save for retirement as pain-free as possible. You just get a little bit pulled out of your paycheck. You don't notice it as much as if you were to write a $6,000 check into an IRA. Most employer retirement plans have decent monitored mutual funds. You may have an employer match that you're missing out on. And best of all, saving money into a pre-tax plan at work like a 401k or 403b is the absolute best way to cut your tax bill come next April 15th.
Yeah, so that that tax reduction is an appealing part of this.
Yeah, I think that it's actually the best part, especially when we are in what I will think will be a low return environment. You can put in up to $16,500 into a 401k or 403b. If you're over 50, you can put in up to $22,000 per year. And every dollar that you set aside into your pre-tax plan will save you 20 to 40 cents in taxes on the next April 15th. And there's kind of a hierarchy, if you will, as to how you should go about saving money and deciding what should be allocated where. First of all, if you are saving into a pre-tax plan at work, you should save enough to get the match. And if you have any more money, then you should save enough to try to get below the 15% federal income tax limit, which we've talked about is line 43 on your 1040. And for 2011, it's $69,000 for married couples filing jointly, and half that, $34,500 for singles. Then, if you have money left over, go to the Roth IRA. That's $6,000 for people over 50 and $5,000 for those under. And then finally, if you still have money left over to save for retirement after you've gone through all those, then go back into the pre-tax plan as well. Now, one of the questions we get is a lot of people say, hey, I have a 401k at work, but they've also put in a Roth 401k or a Roth 403b. And I'm interested in that because I think tax rates are going to go higher and I'd like to pull this money out tax-free. Tax rates themselves might go higher, but I think people's individual tax rates, what their rate actually is in retirement, will be lower for most people than what it is right now for a lot of reasons we've talked about, one of which is you can manipulate your income in retirement. You can't do that while you're working. So generally, most people should avoid the Roth 401k and 403b and use the pre-tax option instead.
You know, sometimes deciding how to invest the money in the plan is almost as hard as increasing the contribution. Can you do this for me, Kevin?
Well, and especially now, because a lot of people say, you know, I've looked at my account, I'm down in the last year, I'm down in the last 10 years, and I just really don't want to throw good money after bad. If you save aggressively into a retirement plan, it actually allows you to invest more conservatively. And so if you can save aggressively, you not only cut your taxes, but you can make your portfolio smoother. Yes, you're not going to make, you know, 8% a year, but you're also not going to go through, hopefully, 20 and 30% drops. However, and we'll be isolating in on these in the next couple of weeks because it's very important. Watch out for stable value funds and money market funds. Those are normally the safest options in many people's retirement plans at work, but there are some hidden risks in there that might create some problems if things get really bad. So if you want to keep the money conservative, you might want to go with an FDIC option if you have one within the plan, or maybe a short-term treasury fund. You're still going to have some volatility with that, but what is in the account is more obvious. Also, definitely go with target date funds if you have the option and ladder them out the years 2015, 2020, et cetera. What we found, too, is that, and a couple studies have confirmed this, is people who have some kind of plan, it's not necessarily that has to be the right plan, but they have some kind of plan to stick to, generally do better than those who are wildly moving in and out of the markets at the bottom and the tops, et cetera. So target date funds and allocating, say, 50-50 between a short-term bond fund and a target date fund, people generally do better because they don't get scared out at the bottom and they don't overinvest at the top.
So is there any kind of investment assistance for workers who are looking at their retirement plans?
Yeah, many of the larger plans actually have some feature in there, like the Wisconsin Deferred Compensation Plan has an advisory service that is relatively nominal, where they'll create portfolios for people and they'll charge an asset-based fee that might be, you know, a quarter of a percent a year or something. And then Vanguard, Schwab, and Fidelity, some of the larger producers, also have those types of advisory services where you can lay that on top of your assets and they'll tell you where the money should be. Another company called Smart 401k will do that for you for a few $100 a year. And then financialengines.com will also do that from anywhere from a few $100 a year to $50 to $100 a month, depending on the size of your portfolio. But we'll put links up to those services at onyourmoney.com later on today.
And more information in the weeks to come. And a reminder, Kevin, about next week, our first day of our special Half the Time Pledge Drive. You have put together a special mortgage money mini book.
Yes, a mini money book titled Making the Most of Your Mortgage, How to Handle Your Mortgage, When You Should Pay It Off Faster, When You Should Slow Down, When You Should Refinance, How Much Mortgage You Should Have, Should You Have the 15 or the 30 Year, What Older People Should Do Who Are Homeowners, where their home equity makes up a significant portion of their net worth. It's all boiled down for homeowners at just about every stage of their life and their financial situation. And again, one of the reasons I like doing this in a mini money book is it costs Wisconsin Public Radio virtually nothing to, you know, they don't buy this from me or anything. I produce it, hand it over to Wisconsin Public Radio, and they distribute it. But because it's in a PDF file, the friction costs of mailing it are very small, and especially if they do it via email, they're zero.
And I, like Kevin, are hoping that this is going to be another record breaker. So tune in and support Wisconsin Public Radio during On Your Money starting next week from 8 until 9 during our fall pledge drive, our Half the Time pledge drive starting next Tuesday. And a pledge of any amount will get this special mini money book on mortgages. And we will take more of your calls for Kevin at 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. This is On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.
My mama told me you better shop around.
And this is the shop around portion of this edition of On Your Money. I'm Joy Cardine with Kevin McKinley, certified financial planner and managing member of McKinley Money LLC. And we will get to more of your calls in just a moment. But with benefit enrollment season starting for many employees, there are some opportunities for many of us to save some money. Please tell us, Kevin, how do we do that?
Well, it is very daunting. It's ironic that, you know, your employer, which is providing your income and your sustenance, really, if you're fortunate enough to have a benefits package at your employer, they plop down this huge, daunting package of paperwork, and you sign a bunch of forms basically concerning your family, your health, and your wealth. And you have to decide within a few weeks and very little information from any outside source what to do, and that can affect you not only in the next year, but for the rest of your life. So a lot of this, it's a good thing to have benefits from your employer. Typically, employers, when they're paying their employees, only about 70% of the cost of an employee actually goes to the employee in the form of salary, and then the 30% goes to cost of benefits, Social Security, et cetera. So we're going to try to help you sort all those things out.
Why don't we start with health insurance?
Well, not surprisingly, both workers and employers will probably be paying more. About 60% of employers offer health insurance to their employees. And according to the latest figures, it costs overall about $15,000 to insure a family of four for a year, about $5,000 for a single person, and that's about an 8% rise or so. About $2,700 of that typically comes from the employee, and about $2,200 or so from the individual employee for a single policy. One of the things that's changed, if people have adult children who have gone to school or not gone to school, they're back at home, they can't get a job, and especially if they can't get health insurance through their job, that many parents can actually put the adult children now on those rolls up to certain limits and certain ages, but it's possible to add them back onto the policy so they can at least get the health insurance coverage. And for some people, this is becoming a more common option. They should definitely either should consider a high deductible plan and a healthcare savings account, and that may be their only option. About 17% of insured people now have one of these plans versus 13% last year and only 4% 5 years ago, according to the Kaiser Foundation.
So who should be looking at this option?
And again, if it is indeed an option, about two-thirds of big plans offer this. It's generally people who are in a higher income and a tax bracket who are going to have very low healthcare expenses coming up, as at least in terms of how much they can predict, and who are already maxing out their pre-tax retirement savings, meaning they're contributing as much as they can to 401ks or 403bs. When you get a high deductible plan with a healthcare savings account, you not only get lower premiums and lower taxes, but you get more money to use as you see fit and to spend out of the HSA, and you also get more flexibility. And one of the things that's very important to remember with a healthcare savings account, this is not a use it or lose it plan. If there's money that you accumulate in your HSA from year to year, it rolls over. And then when you become 65, it either converts to an IRA or you can pull it out tax-free to use for certain qualified medical expenses that you incur in retirement.
And this is different than flexible spending accounts.
Right. And flexible spending, one of the bad things about HSAs is they've called them HSAs, healthcare savings accounts, which sounds in a lot of people's minds like FSAs, flexible spending accounts, which are a use it or lose it. And I've just now gone further to confuse the matter even more in people's minds. Flexible spending accounts are probably going to go by the wayside. The limit is $5,000 for 2012, but it's going to be $2,500 in 2013. And they're a little more risky. These are ones that you put money aside pre-tax and pull it out tax free for qualified expenses, but you have limit on what those expenses can be. Plus, there's a time limit. If you don't pull it out and use it within a certain time frame, usually the end of the year or the following spring, you actually use the money. Those are best for people who are already in a high tax bracket and have planned medical expenses like LASIK surgery or some kind of orthodontia or something like that. It's also good if you are a very meticulous record keeper, because you have to not only know which expenses qualify, but when you can use them and how to justify pulling the money out for those expenses.
So while we're evaluating all these programs and benefits in October, are there other areas in terms of employee benefits that we should consider or look over?
A couple things I'd like people to look at. One is disability insurance, which is a very rarely taken option in the employee benefit program, but I would definitely have people look at it. We're going to talk about that next month. Also, your employer-based life insurance. If you are only purchasing insurance through your employer, you probably don't have enough, and you probably don't have the right kind. So it may be better off to get your own life insurance policy on your own, especially if you're in very good health. With group life insurance, you typically, if you're in good health, you subsidize people in poor health. If you're in poor health, it makes better sense to get the group insurance because you pay a lower rate than you might on your own. Finally, make sure you check your beneficiaries on both your life insurance at work and also your retirement accounts. Generally, if you have someone on there whom you would not want to get the money, if that person's name is on there, it's very difficult to get them off after you're dead, and generally they're first in line to get the money. So check the beneficiaries and make sure the people who are on there are the ones whom you would really want to get the money.
Now, the rest of this edition of On Your Money, devoted to your phone calls, your questions for Kevin McKinley, Certified Financial Planner, 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to onyourmoney@wpr.org. And Arlene in Clintonville is with us now. Hello, Arlene.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call.
Well, thanks for calling.
I have some questions for Kevin on the HSA that he just talked about and the 401k and 401bs. I don't know what the 401ks and Bs are, but I believe that with the HSA, you can only do that if you're still working. If you're retired, can you do any one of these three?
No, that's a great point, Arlene. They're only available to people who are working, and the HSA actually is available if you're under age 65 and you are buying a high deductible health insurance plan. But otherwise, no, you generally can't get one of those kinds of plans in retirement, and you can't open up a 401k or a 403b if you're not employed and you don't have an employer who provides it. If you are working and your employer doesn't have that kind of plan, or you just don't want to use it, you can open up an IRA or a Roth IRA on your own in a self-directed account.
Thank you.
All right. Thank you very much, Arlene. And Vince in Madison, you're on the air. Go ahead, Vince.
Yeah. Hey, Kevin. Just received some monies from a person who had deceased. And the money is currently in a utility bond fund that was yielding 4.1%, and I guess it varies between 4 and 6%. It has never gone down below that. What's the downside of leaving it in that, or why wouldn't you? I've never heard you suggest anybody put anything in utility bonds.
Have you listened to every single show over the last 8 years, Vince? Because I haven't, and I just was going to admire your fortitude of being able to sit through all these shows. I don't dislike those, and especially if you understand the risk. And when you say never has gone below that, that's past tense, not future. What's important to you going forward is the future. It can definitely go below that, and more importantly, what can happen is the value can drop. And if interest rates rise or the earnings of these utilities companies become more precarious in a downturn in the economy, investors might be concerned about how well the bonds in that fund may perform and may sell them. And that can cause the value to go down. Sometimes people say, well, I'm getting 4%. That's better than a CD. I'm going to go with this type of fund, not realizing that you could lose 10% of the value in a month, which eats up a lot of the extra benefit over the CD. If you're comfortable with those risks and you have other safe money set aside, I'm not averse to it. I don't dislike it. In fact, the utilities are better than most other businesses for not only paying their debt but for paying a dividend, because most people can't cut their utility out of their monthly budget.
The next question is, the dividends don't accumulate. Evidently, they just pay those. Can they be made where they accumulate?
Oh, yeah. Most mutual funds allow you to reinvest them. The only thing to watch out for is every time that dividend buys you more shares in the mutual fund, that becomes, for tax reasons, a new purchase. And if and when you do finally go and sell that for whatever reason, if you had, let's say, 12 dividends during the year, go in and reinvest into the fund, you have 12 purchases for which you have to account on your tax purposes. So it's a nice little feature, especially if it's in an IRA or 401k. But if you're on your own, you're probably better just taking the cash, and then that at least cleans up the situation from a tax standpoint.
Vince, thanks for the call. Good luck. Patricia in Madison is next. Hello, Patricia.
Good morning. Thank you for taking my call. I just want to add a comment to the purchasing of iSavings bonds, and this is information provided from Treasury Direct that if they purchase the bonds now in October, they will get the rate that was set last May 1st for their next 6 months. It goes always for a six-month spread from your issue date. So they would earn the 4.6% up until through next March, and then come April after that six-month period, they would be receiving the rate that is set now in November.
Does that sound right, Kevin?
Yeah, these things actually are a lot more complex than, first of all, they should be. They changed the rules, a lot of them. And I remember a long time ago, Patricia, back when I was a young man, something like that coming up. I think you're wrong, but I don't hold this opinion strongly enough to dispute it on the radio. So I'll check into it, and we'll be talking about these Series I bonds. And you sound like a very reasonable person. I have no reason to doubt you.
Yeah, she said she got it from Treasury Direct.
Treasury Direct website. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
TreasuryDirect.gov is where one goes to not only get information on savings bonds, but where to purchase them and the interest rates. And I'm gonna hold off the opinion until a future show, and I will either confirm or disabuse you of this notion one way or the other.
All right, we'll hold his feet to the fire, Patricia. Thanks for calling. I think we have time for one more. Let's go to Doug and Saner. Hello, Doug.
Hello, hi, Kevin. Say I'm a construction worker. My boss doesn't offer any type of 401k or anything like that, and I'm just wondering, you know, if I can talk him into taking money out pre-taxed into a 401k, how does that get handled in the wintertime when I'm on unemployment? How do I keep that pre-taxed money going into that 401k? Or, you know, I mean, another thing is I've got, like, some money left over from a factory, a job I had 13 years ago, and it's just sitting in an account at a credit union, and it's like I only made like about $3,000 on it in 13 years, so I need some advice.
All right, Kevin?
I love helping people like Doug because it's a reminder to me of who actually works for a living and who doesn't. People talking into microphones and sitting in front of computers, this is a different kind of work than swinging a sledgehammer or something. So, Doug, thanks for calling. You can get all the way around your boss, not have to deal with your boss. What you should do is just have an automatic payment set up into a self-directed IRA. And you can have that money taken out of your checking account or out of that credit union account every single month. It doesn't come out of your paycheck, but it is pre-tax if it goes into an IRA. And if you're going to need the money, put it into a Roth IRA. Don't get the tax break on it, but you can pull the contributions back out whenever you want. And you can even go back to that credit union, and they can set that up for you if you'd like.
Thanks very much, Doug, for the call. Kevin, time for the website of the week. What is it this week?
Simply.com. It's SIMPLEE.com. Simply.com is designed to help you track medical expenses, billing, and payment, including FSAs and HSAs. Simply.com. And we'll have a link up to that website and our website, onyourmoney.com, later on today.
So, Kevin, if I want more information on possibly refinancing my mortgage, what should I do next week?
I would show up next Tuesday and from 8 a.m. to 9 a.m., listen, and then pledge any dollar amount to Wisconsin Public Radio, and you will get a mini money book entitled Making the Most of Your Mortgage.
I will do that. And I will talk with you next week, Kevin. Four more words before we go.
Spend less, have more.
Kevin McKinley is a certified financial planner. He is the managing member of McKinley Money, LLC, and he is with us just about every Tuesday for information and advice on your money. And again, next week, Kevin will be back, and it is the day one of our Half the Time Pledge Drive. We are cutting our upcoming fall pledge drive in half from 12 days to just 6. So we really have to double the pledges as well during that pledge drive. I hope you will support On Your Money next week here on the Ideas Network. Thanks to Rob Ferret and to Amanda Magnus, and thank you for listening. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network.